9 at Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with Music and the Truth Until Dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. It's 12 o'clock, Americans, another day closer to victory. And for all of you out there on or behind the lines, this is your song.
Now you cut that fence and get this platoon on the move!
Well, listen, you crummy, flat-footed copper, I'll show you whether I lost my nerve and my brains.
Man, we like to feel that we can get out of trouble quicker than we got into it.
I'm not fighting for anything anymore except myself. I'm the only cause I'm interested in.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. This is the Mountain Pass Podcast. This is your host, as usual, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the great state of Washington. The date is April 14th, 2022. This is the Meme Wars episode. And the reason I call it that is because I just got my new Meme War veteran hat that came in the mail. And it looks just like a regular war vet hat so that when I walk around... Ugh, this is a tongue twister. Not a good way to start off this episode, but we're going to keep going. When I go around wearing it, it'll be fun to see how many people are going to think, oh, what war was he? Was he Iraq? Was he Afghanistan? He looks kind of young. And then they walk up to me and they realize it's a meme war vet. I'm seriously thinking of trying to... this is just me, guys. For example, I have this Blockbuster card. I'm literally holding this Blockbuster membership card in my hand. I want to go to a bar sometime, and when the bar gal says, can I see your ID? I pull this out and say, is this enough proof? Just to see how she reacts. So I actually want to go into some store or wherever where they're like, oh, we got a veteran's discount. I'm like, yeah, does this count? Yeah? That's not a real war. Well, what is a real war? Well, you know, you wouldn't serve in the military. But I fought in a war. Well... It wasn't a real formal war. Oh, gee, when was the last time Congress declared war? You know what the problem is? Nobody's going to know the answer to that. And we can complain about it and lament the total historical ignorance of too many Americans, but I will not let such despondent thoughts spoil this episode. I've actually decided to do something. I'm going to do, not this week, I'm just... This is my future commitment. I'm going to be podcasting 3 times a week. And the reason I'm deciding to do that after I decided to restart the podcast is because I'm not doing a whole lot of writing anymore as far as fiction. I've kind of just, as I said in the last episode, not the last episode, but the most recent one, I am taking a break. I may potentially go back. My books, if one of my books really caught on and people really liked it and they bought thousands of copies, I'd say, okay, you know, I'll give it a shot. I'll write some more and see if it's right. I had my fun. They're great books. I enjoy reading them, which frankly is, you know, if you don't enjoy reading your own books, I don't know what to say. It's like taking photos and not enjoying the photography. No joke. There's sometimes I'll just sit down when I'm, you know, got nothing going on or just wanting to take a break, and I'll just pull out one of my books and read it. I think one of my favorite ones now is the Iridium, which you can get on Amazon. If you like Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon, and The Mandalorian, or Star Wars, you will like this book. It's not a long book. I keep them short. No more 500-page books. Anyways, I was throwing out some ideas on Twitter of like podcast discussions, and so people were given some topics that... I could potentially talk about. So I'm just going to do that for this episode. The first one was somebody had asked me, because I've lived in urban area, I've lived in suburbia, I've lived in rural areas, and someone was asking me to compare and contrast the different places. So I'll just give... That's the fire engine. Apparently something's on fire. This podcast is about to be lit up. So I think people are talking about what's the difference and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to do it from a more practical and easier for me to explain what's going on. If you're a bachelor, what are the advantages and disadvantages of living in rural areas, suburbia, urban areas, and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to get to the end. I'm going to start at the end. I'm going to do a film noir. I'm going to start at the end and then go back to the beginning, and then, we'll have flashbacks reoccurring. If you're a bachelor, you don't want to live in a rural area. You just don't. If you are in your early 20s, you want to go live in a quasi-urban area. I'm not saying you live in an area where there's going to be BLM riots and there's Antifa or anything like that, but you're not going to find a girl your age in a rural area. You're not going to find women there. They have all gone to the city. There are probably opportunities that are in the city that you will not find in rural areas. Rural areas are where you go if you want to be left alone, for good reasons or bad. You already have a family, so you're settling down. And there's nothing wrong with having neighbors and people in the area that have families. But if you're a bachelor, you really don't have much in common. It's very difficult to hang out with, as a bachelor, with other people's with friends who have families, because they're either spending time with their wives, or they're spending time with their kids, or it just doesn't work for you to really spend time with the whole family. It just doesn't happen. And then there's old people there, right? Nothing wrong with old people, but here's the problem I've found with being around too many old people is they are all on their way out the door. And then it's not just old people, it's sick people too. If you're in an area where people have got, there's been this whole debate over like the rural area, go flee to the woods and all that. No, because one of the problems in so many of these rural areas is you have just death everywhere. You have old people, they're dying of cancer, they got heart problems, they've got diabetes, they're mentally just not cognizant anymore, and yet they're still able to like quasi function. And then you've got the druggies. You've got people who are kind of just dead inside. They're like, drug addicts are some of the most demoralizing people you can be around. They're dead inside. They've kind of just lost. They've lost that spark and vitality that you need in life. All they bring is problems. So if you're in a rural area and that's all you see, that can have a huge emotional and mental impact on you. You can have everything. You can have all your ducks. On top of all that, let's imagine that. So you're surrounded by older people, or people who are just not healthy, or people who have drug problems, alcohol addictions. They've got family problems. They got dis The rural areas have just as much family dysfunctions as the suburban urban areas, just in their own kind of way. You got girls living with bad boy, living bad boys. You've got, single moms with bad boyfriends, or you've got men who are shacking up with a crazy. Or you've got kids, like there's all these different problems, or somebody's living with their stepkid, their step family, and there's domestic disturbances. I'm not saying that they're all going to be in one area, but you don't want to be around that stuff. You want to be around healthy people who have, they don't have to be perfect. They don't have to be, Saint Mary the meek, but you need to be around people who are psychologically healthy, that don't have some unresolved trauma in their life, and have a positive vision for where they're going. And they have that just enthusiasm and energy in life. I'm gonna have to do an episode on the whole concept of emotional energy or life energy. It sounds like a weird yoga thing, but I need maybe to come up with a more masculine term for it. We can do that. All in good time. Now, the nice thing about rural areas is you can have, if depending on the area, you can be left alone. You have, depending on where, again, where you're at, you have outdoor recreational opportunities that are right at your front doorstep. If you like hunting, if you like dirt biking, if you like fishing, all this other stuff. You can do all those things. And you can do that if you live in an urban area, which is one of the, flip sides to that. At the same time, it's closer to you. Another problem with living in rural areas is on top, again, this is within the context of being a bachelor. The other problem is just the lack of, I'd say, basic, I don't want to say infrastructure, but just opportunities to meet new people. Unless you work, you know, unless you work in the at some employment center in that area, which there aren't a lot of. There's just not a lot of places to go. I mean, this is one of the reasons why drug addiction is such a huge problem in the rural areas, because there's nothing going on. And also, another disadvantage is you got to drive everywhere. Every rural area I've lived in, you have to drive. You cannot just walk places. So that's an advantage that that I had when I was living in an urban area. I lived in a urban neighborhood where my apartment was right across the street from a shopping mall. There was a grocery store. There was a movie theater. There was a bookstore. There was a coffee shop. There was different restaurants. Like pretty much anything that you wanted. It was the Las Vegas of food cuisine. You could have it. I mean, all within this area. If I wanted to go get my suit tailored, there was an alteration store. If I wanted to go rent videos, there was a rental place. If I wanted to do... if I just wanted to go sit in the areas of the shopping mall and just read a book, I could do that. I could be around, I was constantly around people. Now that particular neighborhood and place didn't exactly have as many young women, but in Western Washington, you got to go to the major cities, like the downtown areas. Not Seattle, but, go to different areas because the women are not going to be, they may be hiking. And I had a weird habit of running into very beautiful girls that were just about to start their hike when I was finishing mine. But that's not a context that's very that's set up for you to be able to get to know them or introduce yourself and actually talk to them. So yeah, you can operate in an urban area without really having to use your own personal vehicle. You can take transit, you can maybe take an Uber or whatever, or you can just walk. There were times when I was just walking everywhere. You didn't have to go far to get anything that you needed. And it's an easy way to stay in shape. I think one of the problems with Americans is many of us need a car to drive around, and so instead of walking, we just drive everywhere. Our cities were not built for us to walk on them. They were built for cars to drive through them. So if I was going to do it all over again, if I was going to wind the clock back, get in that DeLorean, 88 miles per hour, get that flux capacitor going, and make sure that you have plutonium left to spare. If I could go and do it over again, I would have spent more time in an urban area and try to maximize and fully utilize the opportunities that were there. But with the understanding that that's not the way it's always going to be. Me personally, if I could pick from the three, I would pick suburbia, because suburbia has a combination of the two. I think suburbia is where... One, here's another problem with living in a rural area. Your neighbors may not be anywhere near you, and the way things are set up, you don't get to know them. Whereas in suburbia, you can kind of get to know your neighbors, especially depending on the neighborhood. I mean, there's some neighborhoods that are, they're almost designed for you to, you know, socialize with people that live in the same area. And of course, the whole point is to meet a girl, depending on who's talking. We're going to go the more traditional. The idea is to find a girl in the urban area and take her out of that area with you and start a family in suburbia. The rural areas where you move when you want a slower pace of life, because that's the other thing that happens in rural areas. Things just go slower. in the urban area, that's where things are moving. You got to move. You're young. You got the energy to do it. You're enthusiastic about life, you know, all that other stuff. Rural areas where you're kind of taking it easy and you're at the age where you just want to sit in your rocking chair on your front porch smoking a pipe and drinking whiskey. Now, I know some people own cabins in rural areas. My whole thought on the cabin thing is, if you're going to own one, have it be built so that it's minimal upkeep. I personally would have one that maybe is just very bare bones. I was going to have my own personal cabin, I would not have any electricity there. I would have everything, the lighting would be done through candles, lanterns, all the other stuff. It would be a house that is lit up by candles. It's a house that's heated by a wood burning stove. And then for water, you bring the water. You just bring tons of water from a store you buy, and you have the sink and everything set up to where it just drains the water away. And then you have maybe an outhouse. It's very primitive, and that's my personal thing, but the upkeep on that is very minimal. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to worry about the electricity or the wiring. You don't have to worry about the plumbing. You don't have to worry about the water pipes freezing. You don't have to worry about stuff. And some might say, well, what about cell phone service? What about the internet seas? What about the, what about my cell service? It's like, guys, I'm not going to my cabin in the woods. I go there so I don't have to deal with that stuff. And I would not live, I would not have a cabin that's, or a cottage, whatever it is, I would not have one near the ocean. Just because the salt in the air corrodes everything. I know from firsthand experience because I've worked on a buddy's, his family cabin, and just everything rusts. Everything around you, you have to like really have, the amount of effort you have to put into keeping things in good condition is very significant, which I would not recommend. Beautiful views, that's what Airbnb is for. If you want a cottage by the sea, if you want to do a village by the sea meetup, that's what Airbnb is for. You know, let someone else deal with it. The rest of the year, you get to deal with it for a couple days and you don't have to actually work on it. The other question or topic that someone else wanted me to point out is just how technology has restricting our freedom of movement. And I've dealt with that on prior podcasts. I don't know if they're available through SoundCloud. It didn't disable my account, but I didn't renew my subscription. So they've hidden a bunch of my episodes, like almost all of them, and said, well, if you pay us $100, then we'll give it back to you. And I'm thinking, yeah, how about no? Not going to do that. I might find a way for people to be able to access the old ones at some point. It's just going to take a lot of work, and I don't know if my website, if I have the storage space. My conclusion is this. I don't have a law or an actual official term for it, but here's my theory, is that technology, there's no such thing as technological progress in terms of how it frees humans. Up to a certain point. Because yes, there are points in history where things were infinitely worse than they are now. you know, people were dying of childbirth, people were dying of diseases, viruses, plagues, pestilence. They had to deal with, you know, famines, all this other stuff. Okay, we'll accept that. But what seems to be going on is that a technological innovation is introduced, and for an initial while, it's liberating. There's this temporary liberation followed by yet another siren. Man, what is going on out there? But it's followed by constriction, where restrictions are put in place. I'll give an example. The automobile. When the automobile first came out, it was liberating. You were able to travel to different places. You didn't need a horse to go there. You were able to cover distances faster, so people weren't as far away in terms of time spent having to get there. You were able to get to more places in less time. But now we're at the point where so many restrictions have been put in place regarding the automobile that the Zoomers don't want to get their driver's licenses, because for them, cars are not a symbol of freedom. They're not a symbol of freedom of movement. You have to buy the car. Most people can't afford, you can't buy old cars because then you'd have to work on them, and they, you know, we can't do that. And they're expensive anyways. Used cars are expensive. So you either have to pay a lot for a new one, or you got to get do monthly payments, or you do a car lease. And then you got to register the car, and you got to pay the car tabs. And you got to get your driver's license. And then if the car has problems, you got to take it to a mechanic, because the stuff that's wrong with them now are all electronic, and you can't work on it on your own. So it really just becomes this giant money, and then you got to pay for gas. And then you got to pay for car insurance. So there's all these things that just add up to the cost, and it's just thinking, you know, for them, they're thinking. And then also when you go to drive, you got to deal with traffic conditions. There wasn't a lot of traffic back in the day, unless you lived in some major urban area where there's always just going to be bad traffic. And of course, the internet is the one I'd say cell phones. Cell phones are one of them. Cell phones were probably liberating when they first were there, because if you needed to get a hold of someone before that, you had to be at your phone at your house. You had to be available for the call, but nobody expected you to sit around all day waiting for someone to call you. If they called, you left a message. You know, or if they called and couldn't get a hold of you, they left a message on the voicemail, and then you would check the voicemail, and then you would go call them back. And if you couldn't get a hold of them, you would tell them, hey, can you call me back at this time? I'm available and will be around at this time. There was no expectation that you would be just instantly available. And your phone can only do so many things, and was only expected to do so many things. Initially, you could just make phone calls. Then you could do phone and text. Okay, so it really just was a device that served certain features, and it enabled you to do stuff. But now phones have really come to own the people that possess them. And I think I did my final episode when I went on hiatus about this, about how phones and all stuff. And I've sat and thought about it, and it's even when you try to unravel that stuff from your life, it's still complicated. Now, it may be easier for some people. They're like, you know, if you never got into it, it's easy to stay out of it. If you never got on Facebook, it's easy to get off Facebook. If you never got a smartphone, it's easy to not have a smartphone, because you don't have to untangle all these different relationships and contacts that you have, where some of them you can get a hold of by only by Facebook, and some of them only know your email, and some of them only have your phone number. I mean, if I could go again, if I could go back in time, get back into that DeLorean, make sure it's got enough plutonium, I go back, I would have stuck with my flip phone. You know, initially for me, I didn't have, it may shock people, I did not have a smartphone until 2015. I moved to an apartment and I didn't want to pay for internet, and somebody had said, hey, you can just get mobile data for your phone. So I did that, and for $10 a month, I got internet. And it was with my phone plan, and it was on a month-to-month thing, and I paid for the phone outright because it was a cheap phone. So I was getting internet at my... granted, I couldn't stream stuff. I couldn't watch movies online. I couldn't watch YouTube videos through on my laptop or my computer. I could basically just surf the internet and do basic stuff. So, but that's all I was looking to do at the time. But then you start doing stuff, you create this expectation of people where they expect, well, one, they only communicate with you through certain apps, like, or it's, you know, Telegram, or it's, what's it, Signal, or it's Instagram, or it's, you know, that's an example of what I'm talking about. And then you're always worried, well, I'm going to go into I get a little anxiety sometimes when I'm like, for a significant period of time, I'm in a no cell service area, because I know that there's some people where if they reach out to me and they don't hear from me for a while, they kind of not freak out, but just they think I'm ignoring them. And yes, someone will say, well, TJ, that's their problem. I'm like, yeah, it is, but I don't know. You can tell people that, but that doesn't mean they're going to listen. And this is a side principle, but you know, setting habits from early on with people, like their expectations, is important, because if you set high expectations or a certain level of you know, interaction, they're going to expect that. And if you dial it down to something that's more normal, they're going to see that as you taking away something from them that they're accustomed to. And yes, again, somebody can say, well, that's their problem. I understand that. But here's the deal. You got to deal with people. Like this whole, you can't, there's too many people that are like that, at least that I interact with. They are who they are. They're not going to change, and their expectations are always going to be the same. I think the other thing that social media or just the internet has done is notice how we all get consolidated. And this goes back to what I was just saying now. Notice that we're all basically on four websites: Twitter, Google, Facebook, Instagram, like, or maybe I'm not on TikTok. I have no desire to go on TikTok. I'm not going to go on. I don't know what the other sites are. I'm only on a couple of social media sites, but that's where everybody is. If you want to be part of the public discourse and discussion, that's where it is. And so saying, well, I don't want to participate and I don't, you know, you don't have to be part of it. No, but, you know, I know people who don't, and I think the biggest problem is not that they don't participate, but they're not keeping up with what's going on and yet think that they are. And yes, there's, I think there absolutely needs to be moderation and people need to figure it out. I spent an entire weekend not dealing with social media and I felt great. But now the social, I mean, I was watching a documentary on social media where it just showed how much everything you do is monitored by algorithms. And, you know, it can manipulate you, it can manipulate what you see, it can do all this other stuff. And I noticed that on Twitter where it's like, oh, based on your likes, based on your tweets. And it's like, you know, I'd like to control what I see and don't see on Twitter. I like to control what I see and not see on Facebook. I like to control what I see and not see on Instagram. You know, this is why I'm not on Instagram a whole lot anymore, is because it's constantly showing me stuff that I'm not liking or following, saying, you may like this, you may like this. And that's like, or it's an advertisement. It's like half that stuff is stuff that I'm not trying to see. The internet used to be much more decentralized, where there was all these different websites you could go to. There's all these other things that was happening. And now why that is, I don't know. I think it's just because so much of our lives are ultimately controlled by a handful of people. And I'm not just talking online. Like, we all know, if we want to find out like what we're allowed to do, we have to go online. We have to figure out like, what is the latest decree that's being put out? Now, at the same time, if you're not online, cancel culture really can't affect you as much, because much of that is based in, oh, you're online, we can, you know, harass you, we can harass people that you know online. But if you're like, yeah, I mean, if I was ever subject to a cancel culture thing or they were trying to like attack me, I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna go on a hike and not check my phone or my messages and not just completely ignore all that stuff and just bat down the hatch and let the rage go, let the 5 minutes of hate occur, and then just wait until they pass on. Because if you don't apologize and you're like, yeah, I'm not even going to talk to you guys or even talk about it. It was good talking. You have spoken, I have spoken. This has been very good conversation. But let me touch back on that whole thing about progress. I mean, yes, it's great to have a lot of the technological innovations that we have. Oh, I'll give another example where a lot of stuff that we used to do manually, we now have machines doing it, but the machines break down. So then we've got to not only buy the machines, maintain the machines, pay for the machines to be repaired, then we got to replace them. For example, I don't have a dishwasher. I never have to worry about my dishwasher breaking down. My house, the kitchen is 1930s original. No room for a dishwasher. I could go buy one at the store. That's small enough to put on the kitchen count or the kitchen sink, the farmhouse sink, you know, side, and have the water drain into the kitchen sink. But I'm just thinking, I don't need it. It's like $400 for, or not $400. It's a couple hundred dollars for one, and I can do that stuff manually. I mean, there was one point I was looking at when my washer and dryer weren't working, or my washer wasn't working because of the pipes froze during the wintertime. And I was thinking, you know, do I really need a washer like that? Like, can I do this manually? And I was looking, and I was like, wow, actually, go look up how much a hand wringer for clothes costs. Go look up how much like washers cost to like the old fashioned washers. They are not cheap. And yeah, washers last long enough, so then you don't have to worry too much about that stuff. So that's one thing. But I mean, oh, here's another example that I totally forgot about. The flip phone, the smartphone thing. My original flip phone, I still have. I stopped using it in 2009. I have not touched it since, But when I turn it on, when I press the on button, it turns on because it still has battery life. This phone has not been charged in 13 years. My other flip phone I had for years, I only just exchanged it because I wanted to get a smartphone. Most of my smartphones, which I my fault, I should have gotten a protective cover, but you drop them and the screen's broken. Like they break easily. Whereas the flip phones are just renowned. They're like Nalgene bottles. They can't break. I mean, can you imagine? Let me pose this to you. Imagine Americans just in mass gave up their smartphones and went back to using a flip phone. What do you think the United States government's response to that would be? We'll do a ballpark. I'll just say 60 million Americans gave up their smartphones and said, we are going back to using flip phones. I think what happens with technology is you have the eggs get put in one basket. I mean, I don't nearly do this as much. Like if I lost my phone or if my phone broke, it's like, okay, I got my contacts, you know, my photos, it's, you know, whatever. Text messages, I'm not nostalgic for any of them. Or you know, whatever it is. I don't sync up stuff. I don't do any of this stuff. But there's some people I know where everything they do in life is on their phone. They do their banking on their phone. They do all sorts of things. Like their phone is basically like their personal secretary. I think the thing about new technological innovations is they're simple. When they first come out, they're simple. You know, when the computers first came out, they were cool and they didn't need internet to function. Oh yeah, like when I bought my my big flat screen TV 2 years ago, it immediately tried to get me to set it up with my internet server or my internet service. I'm like, no, and I had to spend a half hour trying to figure out how to set up my TV. Like back in the day, you bought a TV and turned it on, and that's all you had to do. Instead, with these new TVs, I had to spend an hour trying to navigate setting the TV up without having to hook it up to the internet because I didn't want my TV hooked up to the internet. But it's just an example of like where we've gone from, oh, it's a TV. You turn the knob, it's on. There's 13 channels that you can tune into. And oh, that was another thing. All you had to do was buy a TV. You didn't have to buy cable. Cable used to be like something special for people who wanted more. But you used to have all these services without that. Just you had a TV. I think it's not good for humans to have too much convenience or comfort. I think that there are, especially when we're growing or we're developing, we're in our childhood, we need to learn how to actually do something without having to rely on an artificial assistant. You know, we should be able to do the manual way. You know, even if your kid doesn't, for example, if he drives an automatic, he should still learn how to drive stick. Because one, he needs to get a motorcycle because he's a man. He's going to be a man. Man needs his motorcycle. You know, let's say the washer breaks down and you have to wash your clothes on your own. They should learn how to do that. learn how to wash dishes, which if you don't know how to wash dishes, I don't know what to how to help you. So you get too dependent. I think that's the word, is how technology not only enslaves us, but it makes us dependent. And that's something that my buddies over at Masculine Geek and I have emphasized is with internet is the internet is a tool. Online social media is an opportunity to meet people, introduce yourself, meet them in person, and take the interaction offline. That is the way, at least with the internet and the social media, that is how you liberate yourself from that and you turn it into a tool. You want to use these things, not have them use you. But I would say the internet, like even though technology has progressed, are we freer now than we were 20 years ago? No, the internet back in the day used to be a very exciting, kind of like just frontier, where you could find pretty much anything you wanted. And there was this understanding that if you didn't like the website, you didn't have to go to it. Just don't go to it. And there was websites for different people to talk about different topics. But now it's all been consolidated onto Twitter. And Facebook. I think one of the problems is that I feel like one of the other problems is I'm not trying to romanticize the past, like 20 years ago. I think people are just more optimistic. I think that's why people are really gravitating towards Elon Musk is he has this like futuristic optimism where he's envisioning a better world out there. Rather than see things get worse, he sees things getting better, or at least he envisions that, you know, driving newer cars or taking us back into space and going to the moon and going to Mars and taking over Twitter and making it a free speech platform again. I mean, I think that's an interesting thing about, I'd say, you know, I've always thought about the Southern Celts, that people who migrated to America in the, you know, 1600s and 1700s, and these people were living on the frontier, but they were free. They pretty much got to do whatever they wanted. They lived their lives on their terms. They didn't have anybody else telling them what to do. And yet their lives were much more primitive than people who lived in civilization and were in cities and had resources and comforts and conveniences, but they were not as free. So I don't think technology actually liberates us, and it doesn't even necessarily make things easier. It doesn't make things more convenient. Speaking of Elon Musk, I guess I'll throw in my initial reaction. I love it. I love what he's doing. It's just fun. Like, he's not boring. I think that this is the biggest thing that people need to understand. If you're going to be a public figure of some kind, don't be boring. And be unpredictable and be exciting. Like, dream big. You know, he's like, oh, I'm going to buy Twitter. I'll buy it. And I'll completely privatize it. You know, it's kind of like when Trump was talking about buying Greenland. Like, it didn't happen, but it just got people interested and excited about something new, something different. Oh, America's going to add more territory. Wouldn't that be interesting? Would people be interested in immigrating, or not immigrating there, but basically moving there and setting up new villages or doing whatever it is you know, like becoming part of something new instead of just wallowing in this quagmire of just inaction. Like, what has anything gotten, you know, as far as gotten better, has anything actually new occurred in the last 20 years? I get that things have changed, and especially in my state, things have changed, and most of it for the worse. But it's like where somebody looks at something that it, the status quo, and says, everybody else thinks it can't be different, and I'm saying differently. Like, daring to dream, as opposed to the woke, the progressives, the social justice warriors, the spurgs, the knob nibblers, the dumbasses, the dweebs, dorks, who all just are like, they suck the energy out of people. You know, you want to do something and they just come up with reasons why it shouldn't be done, why it can't be done, why they're going to interfere. They're discouraging, they're whiners, they're complainers. Elon Musk is not a complainer. He's not a whiner. He may not be a saint. I highly doubt he's a saint in his personal life. But, you know, the people, the shakers, the people who make things happen in life are rarely those without deep personal flaws. But he obviously has an emotional energy, in my opinion. I'll continue to use the term until I come up with something better. He has an emotional energy that gets people excited. He's like, hey, I got this cool idea. He's not always complaining about what's going on, or he's not whining about something that's happening or did happen. He's not stuck in the past. I think that this was the problem even with Donald Trump's, for whatever you think about everything else about him, strictly from a rhetoric, you know, he said, make America great again. That's looking to the past. That's nostalgia. I think with Elon Musk is not talking about nostalgia. He is thinking positive about the future. So anybody, this is just for anybody who wants to be successful. If you were a guy who's like wanting to capitalize on the status of the country right now, I'd say, you need to have futuristic optimism. You need to be able to talk about how we are going to do something great. And you also don't have necessarily a boogeyman. You don't have a scapegoat. You don't have somebody who's responsible for the problems. You say, we're going to accomplish this great project. You know, this goes back to, I was reading that book by Homer Hickam about his life, you know, his different autobiographies and or memoirs. And, you know, guys, put aside John F. Kennedy's politics and his moral personal affairs. What made that guy so popular in hindsight or just after his death was this was a guy who was talking positively about the future. He was young. He had a beautiful wife. You know, it was Camelot. And we're going to go to the moon by the end of this decade. And it actually ended up happening. And I think he just, based on what, because Homer Hickam was in high school when he got elected president and they went to college and all that stuff. And I've listened to some of Kennedy's actual, you know, videos of his actual speeches. This is a guy who could get people excited. This is a guy who could talk about going to the moon. And, you know, Walt Disney had that, first of all, he would have gone to war with his own company today. He'd be stacking bodies probably. But Walt Disney also had futuristic optimism. He was always expanding, you know, with Disneyland. He was always coming up with these cool things. He was always coming up with new ideas. He was just, he had inexhaustible energy as far as what he wanted to accomplish. Another example of that kind of guy for a while was Howard Hughes. I think just his enormous problems in his personal affairs brought him down. But that was a guy who was also just constantly talking about something bigger and better, and things are going to get better, and we're going to innovate and all this other stuff. And so it's an example of where technology, it's not the technology, it's how, you know, when you create something new, when you innovate, what are you doing it for? And how are you framing it? I think that at some point, either we're going to have someone who's has a huge influence over the country, or someone who's actually running things, much of their popularity, their appeal is going to be their futuristic optimism. That 1939 World's Fair, the world of tomorrow, that is going to be, because it's going to be irresistible, and it's going to be, the positiveness of it is going to be contagious. Because I think that people are getting to the point where they're just exhausted dealing with the negativity and the toxic culture and the toxic rhetoric. And after all these years of bashing white people and straight men and America, people are just like, where is this getting anybody? Is this making, you know, and on top of that, you've got gas prices going up, you've got inflation going on, you've got supply chain issues, you've got the war with Russia, you've got just bad thing, bad thing, bad thing, bad thing. People need something to hope for. Whoever gives people hope or reason to hope, that person doesn't need to raise a lot of campaign money. We're not quite at the hour mark, but I think that's all I got to say. That's all I got to say about the war in Vietnam. So I'm assuming you found this episode on my website, tjmartinell.com. All my books are linked on the side. You can buy them. You will read them. You will enjoy them. You will then leave a review, because more reviews I get, the more Amazon likes them, and also the more likely I am to pick up my digital pen and start writing some more stuff. You can also go to terrorhousemag.com. That's where I have a ton of my short stories. You can just Google my name or just look me up in the author profiles. I've written very prolifically for them, and I've also got 2 books published by them already. One's coming out, and I'm going to be submitting another novel to them that's a sequel to a book that they have yet to publish. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Mountain Pass Podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia, signing off.